In the new film, Who Framed Roger Rabbit, Bob Hoskins stars opposite an animated rabbit. Donald Duck, Daffy Duck, and Betty Boop have cameos. Roger Rabbit is an over $40 million collaboration between the Walt Disney and Steven Spielberg production companies. The film has been hailed as the most convincing attempt to have cartoon characters and actors share the screen. Many of us were introduced to actor Bob Hoskins through his crime roles, a mob chief in The Long Good Friday, a low-level member of the underworld in Mona Lisa, and a gangster club owner in The Cotton Club. I like how William Boyd described Hoskins last year in the New York Times. Quote, Hoskins has a wide face and a chunky, dense presence of the sort associated with wrestlers or weightlifters. He is an unlikely addition to that tiny category, the British film star. He possesses the same straightforwardness as Michael Caine and Sean Connery, but they began their careers as handsome leading men. Hoskins is a character actor turned film star. He cites James Cagney, Humphrey Bogart, and Edward G. Robinson as his precursors. Unquote. I spoke with Bob Hoskins from the NPR Bureau in New York. Before we discussed his life, I asked him about co-starring with cartoon characters in the new film Who Framed Roger Rabbit.
Gee, Pathetti, I was thrilled. You saved my life. How can I ever repay you?
For starters, don't ever kiss me again.
One of the things I imagine was hard to do in Roger Rabbit is to figure out how you wanted to play it in terms of the mix of being serious and being comic. There's a temptation probably when you're acting with cartoon characters to maybe go over the top, and you have to figure out where to put the lid on. Did that happen? That you had to figure out exactly what tone to strike between comedy and seriousness?
No. There was no choice. It had to be real.
Uh-huh.
It had to be real. Or the realer I was, the realer the cartoons became. You know, you can't, whatever you're doing, the cartoons are paint, and that's, and the audience know they're paint. It's only your relationship with that paint, with that character, that gives that character any kind of reality.
As I think a lot of our listeners know by now, you had to perform before the characters were sketched in, so you were performing alone to invisible cartoon characters. One of the things you have to do is focus your eyes as if you were actually talking to beings that were there. Did you always have to have a focal point in mind so you would be focused on something that would later be the character?
Well, I had to hallucinate, my daughter, Rosa, who's three, she taught me how to do it. She's got these, she was three at the time, and she's got these invisible friends. And I realized that when I saw Mary Poppins and most of those other shows, it didn't work. You were always aware that this was a gimmick. These were cartoons, and it remained paint. So, and also, eye lines, if you're that close, it notices that you're not actually looking at someone. You're actually looking through them because your eyes your pupils are wider apart.
Mm-hmm.
So, Rosa, she, like when we're kids, our imagination and reality are blended. They're almost the same thing. It's so close to the front of our head, we can bring it out and look at it. And as we get older, the imagination goes further and further to the back of our head. But, I used to sit for hours with Rosa, and she'd sort of play with these imaginary friends, and eventually I saw them. But the problem is that if you do that for 16 hours a day for 5 months, conjuring up these hallucinations, eventually they get out of control.
When you finally saw yourself with the cartoon characters actually in the movie, what were your first impressions?
I was amazed. I thought it was going to be good. I thought it was going to be amazing, but it was extraordinary. Well, the work that they've done is brilliant. Because I didn't see it until a couple of weeks ago, until I came out here. And I did the job 2 years ago. I made two films while in the middle of making this.
Mm-hmm.
You know. So for me, it was extraordinary. I actually forgot that I was in the film. It was like, you know, I'm looking at something that I've never seen before.
Bob Hoskins is my guest, and he stars in the new film Who Framed Roger Rabbit. And he also starred in Mona Lisa, The Lonely Passion of Judith Hearne, The Cotton Club, and The Long Good Friday. You know, many of your roles have been underworld characters. In Roger Rabbit, you're a hard-boiled detective. In The Cotton Club and Mona Lisa and The Long Good Friday, you play people in the underworld. Do you gravitate to those kinds of roles?
No, I think they gravitate towards me.
And why do you think they do?
I don't know. Maybe I... People take me for an underground sort of... I'm pouring some water out, by the way.
Okay.
No, sir. I don't know. I think if you've got a face like mine, you don't usually wind up with the parts that Errol Flynn played. You know?
You said that you assume a lot of people think that maybe you're from that kind of background. Are you in any way?
No.
Okay.
No.
In the movie Mona Lisa... You played a pretty small-time criminal who gets out of jail and gets a job as a call girl's driver. Kathy Tyson plays the call girl, and she works in very pricey hotels, and in the beginning of the movie, you come to pick her up wearing inappropriate polyesters. And I want to play a short clip from the movie. Here's a scene. We've just picked her up after one of her calls.
And that?
You leave me here.
Good night, then.
Get yourself some clothes.
Why would I have to get myself some clothes?
If you're to drive me. Here, use this.
I'm not having you paying me.
Why not?
You don't even like me.
I can claim it.
In this movie, you play someone who is kind of slowed to comprehend what's happening. I think one of the most frequently... Your character's named George, and one of the most frequently said lines in the movie is, "You don't understand, George." Can I ask you, I don't know if you were conscious of how you did it, but can I ask you how you tried to capture the facial expressions of someone who didn't quite get what was happening around them?
Well, one thing you don't do is concentrate on facial expressions.
Uh-huh.
If you do, you're just making faces. What you've got to do is think the character. You've got to be the character and let the face take care of itself.
I'm going to ask you about one more scene in Mona Lisa. There's a scene where you're driving down a bridge in which a lot of prostitutes work, and the windows are rolled down and the car is stopped, and one of the guys walks over to the car, sticks his head in the window, and starts insulting you. You stare at him and then explode. You just take his head in your hand and start bashing it against the door of the car. Then you throw him out and drive away.
Mm.
What did you think about when you were shooting that scene?
Mainly, I thought about not hurting not hurting Perry. The guy's name was Perry Fennick, and I sort of like when you're doing that kind of thing, it may look very violent and all the rest of it, but what you're thinking about is please don't let me make a mistake.
Those sudden outbursts of violence on the part of a character like the one you played give real interesting clues to what kind of character the person is and what kind of tensions they have inside them. Now, I read somewhere that you initially wanted to tone down the violence in the movie, and I wonder why.
Well, it wasn't a question of just toning down the violence. The violence was... it was thoughtless. There was nothing behind it. It was just someone, a violent person. It was... a lot of films that you see are just about someone being violent, a violent person. Well, there are very few people that are just violent.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there's reasons for them being violent. And the reason I accepted the film, the reason the film appealed to me was that it's a love story, a very strong love story. Although a lot of horrifying things happen, they happen because someone loves somebody.
Mm-hmm.
And that, to me, was important. There's so many films now about revenge and hatred and sort of viciousness and sadism. But this everything that happened in that film was purely because someone loved somebody.
It's really a very poignant performance that you've given it.
Thank you.
I want to talk to you briefly about another movie that you made, The Long Good Friday.
Mm.
And you play... Well, I want to play a scene here. and your character is trying to put together a deal with organized crime concerns from America. Mm-hmm. While an American is visiting your character in London, some of his English business associates are murdered, and your character gets the idea that they're being murdered because somebody's trying to mess up the deal that you're putting together with the Americans. And here's a scene where you discover a bomb was left in your casino.
I wonder how I got disconnected.
Well, the wire must have come loose when Lil opened it.
Stroke of luck, though, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Last night, were there any peculiarities?
Usual crowd. Regular punters, nothing really.
Well, no strangers.
A few Arabs. It's a good night. Nothing unusual.
Nothing unusual, he says. Eric's been blown to smithereens, Colin's been carved up, and I've got a bomb in me casino, and you say nothing unusual?
Did you try to hang out with any gangsters, mobsters, before doing this role?
Yeah.
See their luck? You did?
Yeah, well, I it must have been crazy, really. I went down to these clubs and met a load of gangsters and said, teach me to be a gangster.
What kind of clubs?
Well, sort of gangsters' clubs. Where all the gangsters hang out.
Well, what do you do? Go and say, hi, I'm an actor. I'll be playing a guy kind of like you. So,
no, but I
see how you
said,
behave.
I'm playing a gangster in a film.
Mm-hmm.
Can you teach me to do it? And they thought it was very amusing.
I guess it's kind of flattering to their ego. In a
yeah.
Way.
Oh, yeah. Well, there were a lot of real villains, actually, in the film. Like, there's... what was it? There was one scene in it. But apart from the crew and me and Derek Thompson, there wasn't one person in that room that wasn't under suspicion of committing a murder. There was a very heavy mob. It was quite funny, actually, because at one time I was doing a scene and I was shouting and screaming and doing a thing, and one of these guys came up and said, hey, you don't have to do that. I said, what do you mean? He said, you don't have to shout. They know who you are. And I'm like, right, fine, yeah, okay. So I was very quiet after that.
That's great.
And the scene worked. Yeah.
What other kinds of tips did the real gangsters give you?
Well, it was just a way of carrying on, just a kind of attitudes that they had. They're sort of extremely... They're very strange people. Family means everything. They're very loyal, and yet they'd kill you. You know, it's like it's a strange sort of juxtaposition of morality. You know.
Mm-hmm. Well, did you get any cards or phone calls from any of the people who you apprenticed after they saw the movie?
No. Well. One guy who was quite a famous villain in London escaped from prison just after I'd made the film. And I was in a pub and someone came in and said, someone wants to see you. I thought, oh, God, what's this? He said, no, it's okay. And this guy had was on the run and he was hunted by Interpol and all kinds of people. And I walked into the pub, and there he was, standing there. And he said, listen, Bob, I've seen the tape of the film, and I just want to say we're glad to see one of our own doing well. I thought, I've never hurt anybody in my life. What are you talking about? And certainly never killed anybody.
So you didn't call the police afterwards and tell them that you just met with this guy, did you?
No, certainly not. I just went back to the pub and with trembling hands had a very large scotch.
That's great. Well, I want to talk with you more about your life and your acting, but first we're going to take a short break. My guest is actor Bob Hoskins, who stars in the new film Who Framed Roger Rabbit, in which he acts opposite an animated rabbit. He's also starred in Mona Lisa, The Lonely Passion of Judith Hearn, The Cotton Club, and The Long Good Friday. More after this short break. This is Fresh Air. My guest is actor Bob Hoskins, who stars in the new film, Who Framed Roger Rabbit. Can we talk a little bit about your background? I'm real curious about what kind of neighborhood you grew up in.
Working class.
Mm-hmm.
Sort of a normal working class area. There was, you know, a mixture of hardworking people, layabouts, villains, gamblers. Like a normal area, you know. It was a, you know, it was a mixture of everything.
Which side were you gravitating to when you were a teenager?
Survival, I think. Like, you know, just to earn a living. I was never a great, great one for. I was never very clever. Like, by sort of what I mean is, I don't mean I'm stupid. What I mean is, like street talk and the street kind of survival, where some people really thrive on the street. You know, some people become very rich on the street. I never did. I was sort of pretty ordinary, really. It was only when I was pretending to be on the street that I started to get rich.
But I guess having observed a lot of people who did well on the street helped you play characters like that?
Yeah, oh yeah, oh yeah. It was a big, help in the background. And I suppose actually within an ordinary area, if you was brought up in Brooklyn or the Bronx or sort of you know, these kind of areas, there are people there that are very respectable, very honest, ordinary people, but they're surrounded by sort of drug dealers or, you know, all the other stuff, so they can't be off sort of living with it. You know, so my experience of the crime world was an everyday occurrence.
Before you started acting, from what I've read about you, you had short jobs as a circus fire eater, a steeplejack, a seaman, an accountant, an interesting variety of positions. How did you end up joining the circus for a while?
That was after I was an actor.
That was after you were an actor?
Oh, yeah.
Oh.
No, I became an actor, and I met this guy, a friend of mine, who was running a circus. And he said, "You want to come down for a season?" I said, "Yes." I leapt at it. "I have some of that." "Yes." "Wonderful."
So you had to learn how to eat fire and all that.
Oh, yeah, fire eating. And sort of, I was fire eater, ringmaster, escapologist, all sorts of stuff. Okay. Anywhere you could fit in. It was just about, you'd grab a whip and grab a hat and you're on, kid. You know.
What kind of raft did you do when you were the ringmaster?
I couldn't remember it now. It's too early in the morning. You need a whip, really. You know, whip the audience into submission.
I don't know if this is a true story or not, but the story that goes around, which I suppose is true, is that you got your first role by accident.
Mm, yeah.
Right? Would you tell the story?
Well, yeah. God, it sounds terrible now. I was in a bar in an amateur theatre, and there was a lot of people there sort of reading these, well, at the time were scripts. I didn't know what a script was. And this guy came down and said, "Right, you're next." And I, "Oh, am I?" And I'd had enough drink to sort of think, "Oh, okay, I feel a bit adventurous." Went upstairs and they said, "Have you seen the script?" I said, "No, what does it look like?" And they gave me the script, said, "Do you want to read it?" And I read it, and they said, "Well, do you want to read it out loud so we can hear it?" So I read it out loud, and I got the part. I was playing the lead in this play. And the first night, an agent came to see it and said, "You should take this up professionally." I said, "Well, get us a job, and I will." And she did. And I've been a professional actor ever since.
So who did you learn from? Did you learn from a lot of the actors and directors that you worked with when you started performing on stage?
Oh, yeah, yeah. I mainly learned from women.
Why is that?
Well, I realised very early on that, like, drama is about very private moments. Like, most of the time, people walking around hide behind a sort of shield of style or whatever. But drama is about showing those very private moments, those painful moments, those ridiculous moments that make up the human life. And because women have had to keep their mouths shut for sort of thousands of years, they developed this technique of making those private moments felt very clearly. you know, guys who've plenty of been talking for these thousands of years and saying exactly what they feel, don't express themselves very well. They hide behind this shield of masculinity. And those private moments are very difficult to get at through men. You know? Do you know what I mean?
It's got nothing to do
with male and male and female. It's particularly how you express yourself.
Now, do you think the women who you learned this from were aware of that, or did you just learn it from observing them?
I learned it from observing them, sort of women in general, and mainly and actresses. You know, watching the way that an actress would put forward an idea or a feeling. Just watching, like, you can walk in a room, and if there's been a row between two women, you know. You know what I mean? Or if a woman sort of wants you to know something without telling you, you know. And that's the job of an actor, to make an audience know.
No, see, what I find interesting, too, about what you're saying is that you have an incredible style on screen, but I understand what you're saying, too, is that what makes a good performance is having that style and let the inside stuff show behind it.
Yeah.
To have those breakthroughs to what's behind the style.
Yeah, yeah. Well, 90% of the job, 90% of being an actor is just telling the story.
Right, right.
But it's that 10% where that inner thing has got to show.
Was your Cockney accent ever a problem in roles you had to play?
Not really, no.
Did you have to learn different accents when you started acting? Did you already know how to do that?
Yeah, well, I suppose if a guy... I've always told jokes, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And if you're going to tell jokes, there's always racial jokes. And I used to tell all kinds of racial jokes, you know. all kinds of different accents.
So you have to do accents to tell the jokes.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Oh, gosh. You know, while we're talking about actors and actresses who you learn from, I know you performed, I think, pretty early in your career in a play with John Gielgud.
Yeah.
Did you learn anything from him?
Yes, I did. Well, he was extraordinary, Gielgud. Because I had only been in the business, 2-3 years. And suddenly I was on stage in a 40-minute scene with John Gielgud, and I had all the lines. I couldn't believe it. And he was wonderful. He was really wonderful to work with. And I'll never forget, I had a line in the scene. What was it? I can't remember what the line was now, but it was a funny line. It was a gag line.
Uh-huh.
And, but I it wasn't getting as much as I thought it should get, you know?
As much laughter?
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
And, I said to him, you know, what am I... I said, I'm not getting enough out of this. He said, well, what you should do, he said, is, when you come to the line, step back 2 paces, count 2, and then say it. What? You got to be kidding. No, it'll be fine, I promise you. And so he came to me. I'd forgotten about this, and he was sitting up on this big box all the way through the scene. And I came to the line, and he shouted out down to me, step back 2 paces and count 2. Oh, you've killed it. Thanks a lot. So I did. I stepped back 2 paces, counted 2, and the audience went crazy. I got around. And I looked up at him, and he's not very good at winking, and there he is trying to wink at me. You know, I told you so. Well, after that, I did it again the night afterwards, and I got another round. I thought, he must be doing something up there. What's he doing? This can't be me. So the night after, I did it again. And quick, as soon as I said it, I whipped round and looked at him again. And he was still sitting there trying to wink at me. You know, he wasn't doing a thing. And every night after that, I stepped back 2 paces, counted 2, and got around. And I could never figure this out. And ever since, every single show I've ever done, there's always a point where I'll step back 2 paces, count 2, and I've never got a thing, not a titter. It's never worked since.
So that's not something that has changed your career forever from
No,
lesson.
It's driving me nuts.
Do
Do you think he was really like making faces at the audience or doing something behind your back?
Well, I thought he was, and I thought I'd catch him out, but he wasn't. No,
that's funny. I understand you're directing a movie that you've written the screenplay for.
I've directed it. It's finished.
It's finished already. But yeah. When's it opening? It's called Raggedy Ronnie.
Yes, right. It opens here in September.
Oh, great. Now, why did you want to start directing?
I didn't.
Oh.
I've got no ambitions to be a director at all. I'm certainly not giving up my day job.
So you didn't initially plan to get involved with directing. Are you glad you did it?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, it was an extraordinary experience. But also, the whole thing is made up of the crew and the actors are all very, very close friends of mine. You know, most people who were involved in the film were at my wedding, you know, and so very intimate with my children and stuff like that. So it's sort of and the leading man, Dexter Fletcher, I've known him since he was 11 years old. And the leading lady, it played my daughter in Mona Lisa.
Oh.
Zoe Nathanson.
Yeah.
And the guy who I tried not to hurt, bashing his head on the window, he plays my son, Perry
Great.
Nathanson. He plays my son.
One last question. I noticed from seeing you on TV this week that you have a beard now. Did you grow that for a role or for life?
No. I just can't be bothered shaving. I'm very lazy when I'm not working.
Okay. Thanks so much for talking with us. I've really enjoyed hearing from you immensely. Thank you very much.
Thanks a lot.
My guest has been actor Bob Hoskins, and he stars in the new film Who Framed Roger Rabbit, which just opened. And in it, he stars opposite an animated rabbit. He's also starred in Mona Lisa, The Lonely Passion of Judith Hearn, The Cotton Club, and The Long Good Friday. I'm Terry Gross, and this is Fresh Air.